Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, Understanding Material Nature. Before we read the verse, just as a comment, how many here know Indradhuma Maharaj? I've heard of it. How many know Sankarshan Guru? Do you know what they both have in common?
Both of them preaches to this Russian belt.
Well, one thing they have in common is that they're both practically deaf. Deaf. No deaf, they can't hear. And do you know why they can't hear?
So, loud chanting, they heard.
The chanting? Probably not the chanting.
Instruments.
The instruments, right. That's why they can't hear. Matter of fact, there's a lot of musicians, especially rock musicians, who have gone deaf. They can't hear either. They can't hear their own singing. Because certain level of sound, which is measured by decimals, I have a decimal reader here. You go above a certain decimal reading, then the hairs in your ear, which allow you to hear different sound levels of sound, they die from the sound vibration. And therefore, when enough of them die, then you can't hear on that level. And then, after a while, you can't hear the high pitches. So the first thing you can't hear is women talking. And then after that, you can't hear anything practically. Like Sankarshan Guru, you can't even... That's why, I don't know if he wears them here, sometimes he has these big earmuffs. Because he not only can't hear, but the sound vibration actually is painful to him. And Indradhuma Maharaj has a hearing aid he wears all the time. Because he actually can't, he has become deaf in his ears. So, if you want to follow that, just stand near the wampers, and in a few years you'll also become deaf. It takes a few years. You may not be able to notice it immediately. Because anyone who stands next to the wampers for some time, or really loud cartels, whatever, then after a while you'll get a headache. Or at least you'll feel some disturbance. But after some time, some years, you'll actually go deaf. So it's not recommended. And it doesn't take much. That's why when you go out to the airport, what do you see? The people who work in the airplanes, what do they wear? What's that? These very powerful earphones. And our kirtans often are higher than the airplanes. The amount of sound emanating from the airplane engines is lower, the decibel rating is lower than our kirtans are. And we're a lot closer to the decibel rate, to the sound, than the people who work in there are close to the engines. And we spend probably more time. Anyhow, you got the message, I'm sure. So, text, just 28 is on the board?
28, 29.
With just 28 is on the board. So, Madhata Pratibhu Dharto.
Madhata Pratibhu Dharto.
Matrasadena Bhujasa.
Matrasadena Bhujasa. Of my spiritual energy of unadulterated bliss.
That is the ultimate perfectional goal of the living entity. After giving up the present material body, the mystic devotee goes to that transcendental abode and never comes back. So please repeat, my devotee,
my devotee
actually becomes self-realized.
Actually becomes self-realized.
By my unlimited causes mercy.
By my unlimited causes mercy.
And thus,
I'm
free from all doubts.
I'm free from all doubts.
He steadily progresses towards his destined abode.
He steadily progresses towards his destined abode.
Which is directly under the protection of my spiritual energy.
Which is directly under the protection of my spiritual energy.
Of unadulterated bliss.
Of unadulterated bliss.
That is the ultimate perfectional goal.
That is the ultimate perfectional goal.
Of the living entity.
Of the living entity.
After giving up the present material body.
After giving up the present material body.
The mystic devotee.
The mystic devotee.
Goes to that transcendental abode.
Goes to that transcendental abode.
And never comes back.
And never comes back.
Purport. Actual self-realization means becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. The existence of a devotee implies the function of devotion and the object of devotion. Self-realization ultimately means to understand the personality of Godhead and the living entities. To know the individual self and the reciprocal exchanges of loving service between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities, real self-realization. This cannot be obtained by the impersonalists or other transcendentalists. They cannot understand the science of devotional service. Devotional service is revealed to the pure devotee by the unlimited causeless mercy of the Lord. This is especially spoken of here by the Lord, Mat Prasadena, by my grace. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Only those who engage in devotional service with love and faith receive the necessary intelligence from the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that gradually and progressively they can advance to the abode of the Personality of Godhead. Ishrayasa means the ultimate destination. Svasamsthanam indicates that the impersonalists have no particular place to stay. The impersonalists sacrifice their individuality so that the living spark emerge into the impersonal effulgence emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord. But the devotee has a specific abode. The planets rest in the sunshine, but the sunshine itself has no particular resting place. When one reaches a particular planet, then he has a resting place. The spiritual sky, which is known as Kaivalya, is simply blissful light on all sides and is under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 14:27, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, the impersonal Brahman effulgence rests on the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Kaivalya, or impersonal Brahman. In that impersonal effulgence, there are spiritual planets, which are known as Vaikunthas, chief of which is Krishna Loka. Some devotees are elevated to the Vaikuntha planets, and some are elevated to the planet Krishna Loka. According to the desire of a particular devotee, he is offered a particular abode, which is known as Svastamsthana, his desired destination. By the grace of the Lord, the self-realized devotee engaged in devotional service understands his destination even while in the material body. He therefore performs his devotional activities steadily without doubting, and after quitting his material body, he at once reaches the destination for which he has prepared himself. After reaching that abode, he never comes back to this material world. The world, the words lingad vinirgame, which are used here, means after being freed from the two kinds of material bodies, subtle and gross. The subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, false ego, and contaminated consciousness. And the gross body is made of five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And when he's transferred to the spiritual world, he gives up both the subtle and gross bodies in the material world. He enters the spiritual sky in his pure spiritual body and is stationed in one of the spiritual planets. Although the impersonal has also reached that spiritual sky, after giving up the subtle and gross material bodies, they are not placed in the spiritual planets as they desire. They are allowed to merge into the spiritual fulgence emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord. The word swasamsthana is also significant. As a living entity prepares himself, so he attains his abode. The impersonal Brahman effulgence is offered to the impersonalists, but those who want to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in its transcendental form as Narayan and Vaikunthas, or with Krishna and Krishna Loka, go to those abodes wherefrom they never return. So the text again. Mad-bhakta-prati-buddharto mad-prasadena-buddhasa nishayasam-sursamsthanam vaivayakyam-tadatmarashayam. My devotee actually becomes self-realized by my unlimited causes mercy, and thus, when free from all doubts, he steadily progresses towards his desired destined abode, which is directly under the protection of my spiritual energy of unadulterated bliss. That is the ultimate perfectional goal of the living entity. After giving up the present material body, the mystic devotee goes to that transcendental abode and never comes back. Om Vishnu Graya Krishna Prasthaya Udhari Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamne Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaurabhanu Charne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatvati Charne. Here is Krishna's opinion that there are many possible destinations. The Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Ye Tama Prabhajante Tam Siddhaiva Bhajamyaham Mama Varna Nuvartan Cha. Manusha Jana Sarvashaha Ye Tama Prabhajante Tam Siddhaiva Bhajamyaham Mama Varna Nuvartan Cha.
Manishya Bhata.
Is that?
Manishya
Bhata. We have a Bhagavad Gita.
Manishya Partha.
Sarvashaka. Manusha Partha Sarvashaka. Yeh Kama Prabhupada. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Kunti. So most people don't know about either Brahman or Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan. If you don't know about a destination, it's very unlikely you're going to arrive there. If you didn't know that Adelaide existed and you started to walk, it's very unlikely you're going to wind up in Adelaide. And even if you got there, you wouldn't even know you arrived, because you didn't even know it existed. You'd have to ask someone, where am I? Similarly, to reach the spiritual sky, Brahman, Krishna says, there are certain qualifications even to get there. Yetu Sarvani Harmony Maya Sanyasa Matra. Actually, that's sort of the spiritual world. Avyakta Satya Chaita Sama Avyakta Hir Dukam Dukha Advir Devam Bhakti Abhavshita. Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, text number 3-4. Hitvakshama nirdesham avyakta paripasate sarvatru dhamma chintyam cha Kudastav achalam dhruvam saniyam yam viragramam sarvatra samabhudaya tevatm vantimam eva sarabhuti teratha. So it takes a long time even to recite the verse, so there must be a lot of qualifications. to reach Brahman. Matter of fact, if we go through the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it takes around 50, actually, until we get to Brahma Buddha Prasanatma, which is text number 54. So Krishna has explained 54 verses what the qualification to reach Brahman is. And considering that there's only 78 verses in the 18th chapter, he uses most of the 18th chapter to just describe how to reach Brahman realization. How to go through Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, to finally reach Brahman. So, to reach Brahman requires some qualifications. Not that anyone just does whatever they want and they reach Brahman. So Krishna says, for those who fully worship the unmanifested. So how many people are worshiping the unmanifested that you know of? Anyone here know anyone who's worshiping the unmanifested? So that means that everyone already is disqualified. Which lies beyond the perception of the senses. And how do you worship something beyond the perception of the senses? Prabhupada will explain. It's rather difficult to do that. Very unexciting. Imagine you said, someone said, who's your girlfriend? You say, well, I'm madly in love with her, but I don't really know who she is. What does she look like? I never saw her. What does she do? I have no idea. Somehow or another, I decided to worship her. What are you doing for her? I'm not really quite sure. What is she doing for you? She's doing nothing for me. Never met her. But we're developing a relationship anyhow. All pervading, inconceivable. So try to worship something that you can't conceive of. Something that's everywhere, but you can't conceive of it. Unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth. And what do you have to do? Control the senses, and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in welfare, a last achievement. So it takes a long time. Many, many births and deaths, Krishna says, to worship Brahman. And what do you get? You get nothing. At the end, not that you don't get anything. You get nothing, and you get rid of all the other things which are disturbances. In other words, the mature world is all negative, so you get rid of the negative. You wind up with nothing but the positive. After probably speaking millions of lifetimes of trying to achieve Brahman. Now, of course, most people are materialists in the modern society. But materialism, where does matter come from? What's the actual source of matter, besides saying Krishna? But what energy from which of Krishna's energy does matter come from? What's that? What does that mean? From the Brahman effulgence, Krishna transforms the Brahman effulgence into matter. So worshipping matter, or the materialist, is another form of impersonalism. Just like we say we love someone, we love this girl or this boy, but actually what we're doing is we love trying to exploit their bodies or their subtle minds. So that desire to exploit is impersonal, because we're just trying to exploit people's dead material bodies and their dead material minds. So it's a form of impersonalism, although it's glorified as romance, whatever else it may be glorified as. But ultimately, it's just, when we say sense gratification, without Krishna, we're just referring to exploitation of Krishna's energy. And it's impersonalism. When we get tired of trying to exploit Krishna's external energy, then we want to merge into it, so we can become it. So instead of trying to control it, we want to become it. Of course, that little tiny spark, merging Brahman, he's just sitting there thinking, I'm Brahman. But does he really become Brahman? When Krishna and Arjuna went to the spiritual sky, the Sarjats and the Brahmins' stolen sons, they went through the Brahman effulgence to reach Mahavishnu Loka. And Krishna remarks that the Brahman effulgence, in the Brahman effulgence, there are unlimited souls who emerge, seemingly emerge from the Brahman effulgence. So we might become one of hundreds of quadrillions of spiritual souls in the Brahman effulgence, and each one of them is thinking, I am Brahman, I am the Brahman effulgence. It's like a drop of water thinking, I'm so great, I'm in the ocean. Matter of fact, I'm not only in the ocean, I am the ocean. And every drop of water thinking, I am the ocean. It's almost like here we are in Australia, and if someone says, what country are you from? Australia is my country. Really, it's your country. Is the country legally registered in your name? What does it mean, it's your country? When the tax department comes and says, my dear sir, can you pay this tax? You say, no. It all belongs to me. It's my country. So, when they allow people to say, it's my country, they're just trying to humor people. So they become deluded and they're actually servants of the country. It's not their country. The little spark is not Brahman, it's simply merged Brahman. It's a servant of Brahman. But it takes a long time. It's practically not possible in this age to achieve such an undertaking. Therefore, people are satisfied being personalists, but being materialists. They won't go through the austerity in this age to reach Brahman, but they'll simply try to exploit the gross material energies to the utmost, which is another form of impersonalism, which we call materialism. And therein, Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, he more or less calls them, well, he says there are two kinds of living entities, the fallible and the infallible. So those are infallible are those who are dovetailed with Krishna's interests. And those who are fallible, those who are outside of Krishna's interests. And out of the two, of the materialist and the impersonalist, probably gives more credit to the impersonalist than he does to the materialist. At least the impersonalist, they go through some discipline to reach impersonalism, while the materialist generally is uncontrolled. Especially if he doesn't follow any Vedic process, he's simply a Vikarmi, less than the animals. But there is a process of reaching Brahman. But even when one reaches Brahman, is that one will not feel very successful after some time. Now, the question is why there is so much emphasis in these books upon the difference between personalism and impersonalism. When Brahmananda Prabhu was in New York on 26th Second Avenue in 1966, when Prabhu was lecturing there, he would often speak about the impersonalists in a very negative way. So Brahmananda Prabhu was wondering, why is Swamiji, who Prabhu was known to at that time, why is Swamiji always criticizing the impersonalists? Especially the Mayavadis. So Brahmananda Prabhu was thinking that maybe Prabhupada had some conflict with the Mayavadis in India. And it was such a big conflict, he couldn't forget about it, even when he came to America. And therefore when Prabhupada gave lectures, he spoke what was on his mind, which was namely his conflict with these Mayavadis in India. But then after some time, Brahmananda Prabhu realized that actually the Mayavadis that he was talking to were in the audience. Especially some of them went to India and actually became contaminated by this Mayavadi philosophy that there is no kind of later on, after you probably went to Los Angeles in 1971, because he had heard that some of his disciples had heard from his godbrothers that he was being undermined, that Prabhupada had unjustly or unauthorizedly assumed the title of Prabhupada. Therefore his godbrother was criticizing him, that title was only reserved for their spiritual master. Of course, there's nothing stated about that. But they were, and they had told Prabhupada's disciples in India, those who were there at that time, that Prabhupada was actually unauthorized. He had assumed Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's title, etc., etc. That went back to some of the disciples, the leaders in the West, and then Prabhupada became very disturbed that the faith of his disciples was being undermined by his godbrothers from India. Therefore, he formed the UBC, and he gave sannyas to some of those leaders who were undermining him. And they left, they went to New Vrindavan in 1971 for Janmashtami. And I was there for that time. And they were sannyasis, so they had a superior position. And they dominated the classes. And I remember I was in one set of class, one of those sannyasis stood up and said, actually, we were all offenders, everyone in the class was an offender, because we didn't recognize the Prabhupada was God. So I thought, well, I guess I was thinking of getting up and leaving class, but I didn't want to be disrespectful. They said that's why Prabhupada went to Japan, is because we didn't recognize that he was God, and therefore it was an offense. Because it caused quite a stir, and later on they got together and they had the devotees, well, the PBC members at that time, asked those sannyasis to leave the movement, because that's what Prabhupada said, and to go elsewhere, which they did. And eventually they asked forgiveness and they were reinstated within the movement. I met them also down. I was asked, Prabhupada had asked me to open a temple, so they sent me to Miami at the end of 71, and I met them there. Those sannyasis who had hitchhiked from Detroit. This is around 2,000 or 3,000 kilometers. And I met them down in Florida, Coconut Grove, because I was supposed to help start a temple there. And I talked to them, and they said, actually, we were misunderstood. We were saying that Prabhupada was, because they had heard from Prabhupada, actually, he's not God, he's the servant of God, form of God. So he said, actually, we were misunderstood when we were saying the Prabhupada was God. We actually meant he was servant of God. So seemingly that was clarified, but later on, other senior devotees within our society, they also came up with this philosophy, similar philosophy. So this philosophy is quite common, that impersonalism, Mayavadi, the difference between impersonalists, they believe that God is maybe a real person, he may exist, but he's subordinate to impersonal Brahman. If you try to get your intelligence around that one, it's not normal common sense, won't allow it. In other words, to think that from something impersonal is coming, by common sense, it wouldn't be allowed. Because that would imply that within personalism, within something impersonal, there's the potential of becoming a person. Just like, for instance, this glass here is a manifestation of Brahman. So it should have the potentiality if from impersonal Brahman came the personal Krishna. So this cup should have the potential to produce a person. So how long do you think we have to wait here before this cup produces a person? Suddenly gets impregnated by another cup. It starts expanding. And then a little cup pops out. We probably have to wait a long, long, long time. longer than we have to experience such a phenomenon. So the impersonalists, they believe that from impersonal, something personal came, like Krishna, for instance. The Mayavadis say, they also agree, it's probably sometimes close, Narayana Karov Yadda, that even Sankaracharya Prabhupada sometimes quotes, accepts that Krishna is Narayana, is above the material nature. So that seems like a compliment, that maybe Sankaracharya was contradicting himself, he actually believed in Krishna, that he was a person. He did. He said at the end of his life, Bhaji Govinda, Bhaji Govinda, Bhaji Govinda, Munamate, that what will your speculation do for you? Just worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. But in his words, Narayana Prabhyakta, that's not exactly saying that Narayana is above Brahma. But it's saying that Narayana Prabhyakta, he's above the manifested material energy. Because the Mayavadi, their philosophy, is from the impersonal Brahman, the material nature of the Narayana is manifested. And the Narayana manifests the material nature. But ultimately, the material nature doesn't exist, and ultimately, Narayana doesn't exist. So it's not a very much compliment to say that someone who doesn't exist manifested something that doesn't exist either. It means really it's a nonsensical philosophy. But anyhow, what do they base it on? They base it on word jugglery. Word jugglery means that they know Sanskrit, and utilizing the Sanskrit literature, they give indirect interpretations to the Vedic or the Sanskrit slokas. Like for instance, if there's a sloka, it says, the house is on the water. So, generally speaking, what it means is that the house is by the water. That's the most direct interpretation. But they interpret it that the house is actually in the water. When by Sanskrit, it would actually mean the house is by the water. So by word jugglery, by indirect interpretation, they can come up with the conclusion that actually there is no Narayana, there is no material nature, everything is Brahman, and that's the source of everything, and that Brahman is simply having a pastime of believing, of make-believing that there is something other than Brahman. So if you can't understand that, that's good. But in order to understand Sankaracharya, what he's doing, you have to learn Sanskrit. See how he's juggling Sankaric slokas. And that may take 12 years to learn Sanskrit. And then after doing that, and you see how Sankaracharya is juggling words, then the conclusion is, I just wasted 12 years of my life to learn Sanskrit, to find out how someone is cheating using Sanskrit. But Jiva Goswami has gone through the trouble of writing the Sandarbhas to point out the jugglery of Sankaracharya. So if you want to find out how the impersonalists are using word jugglery, you can read Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas. And that will explain everything. In any case, we're not supposed to be impersonalists, and we're certainly not supposed to be Mayavadis. But even if we accept the impersonalism, but that takes qualifications to actually realize it. But there's something higher than that. If we want to take the trouble of realizing something higher than material nature, transcending into some reality higher than material nature, then we might as well transcend into the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. And therefore the Bhagavatam, like the demigods, who are supposed to know more than we are, they say, that those who are not taking shelter of the lotus feet of the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead, their intelligence remains Abhishudaya. Abhishuddha means completely pure, and Abhishuddha means impure. What's impure? Their buddhaya, their intelligence remains impure because they don't have the correct understanding of things. So although they may merge temporarily in Brahman, still they get bored after some time and they'll come back to the material world because they don't find shelter in Brahman. As Prabhupada said in this verse, if you go into the sky, how long would you want to stay in the sky? You get into an airplane. Most people get into airplanes because they want to go somewhere. They don't want to just sit in the airplane for the rest of their life. Anyone have an aspiration to sit in an airplane for the rest of your life, being in the sky? Prabhupada points out that the first cosmonaut, famous Yuri from Russia, when he was up in the sky, what was he doing? He was looking for Russia. They claimed there is Russia. His idea was not to merge into the sky. Eventually he wanted to come back again. But similarly, those who are in Brahman after some time, they start getting bored and they want to come back to the material world again. And they start all over again, suffering in the material world, and then merging back in Brahman. That's probably the history of all of us. But there is shelter, there are planets in that spiritual sky, and the Bhagavad Gita gives information of them, such as Vaikuntha. And Bhagavad Gita Krishna says that Avyakta Shri Jutas Tamahu Paramangatim and Prapya Nanivartante Tadhama Paramamama. That abode of mine, or he says, Avyakta Shri Jutas Tamahu Paramangatim and Prapya Nanivartante Tadhama Paramamama. Beyond the manifested and unmanifested internal nature, there is the unmanifested spiritual sky, or the manifested spiritual sky. That abode is supreme. For us, and when one goes there, he never returns to this temporary material world again. So Krishna, he tells us that there's a spiritual world. And at least in our Bhagavatam, if you take his authority, then it also describes that spiritual world. And intellectually, we can understand it. If we at least understand we're not this body, if we accept we're not this body, then we can accept we don't really know what's going on. Because after all, simultaneously, with our intelligence, we can understand that we're eternal souls, and at the same time, we can see we're an illusion. Seeing that we're an illusion means that we don't really know what's going on. We just have a little insight through the mercy of Bhagavad Gita that we're eternal. On the other hand, if all of us are eternal, and then there's a supreme person, which also with our intelligence we can see how he's manifesting the natural nature and working under intelligent direction, how time is controlling everything beyond anyone's control. Seeing the words of Bhagavad Gita, although we may not directly perceive the spiritual energy, unless we're engaged in kirtan or the process of devotional service, but even just using our intelligence, we can understand that if there's a supreme person and we're all souls, the supreme person wouldn't just spend his whole existence keeping little tiny souls in the material energy. He must have another place where he actually enjoys with those little tiny souls when they're liberated. We may not see that place right now, but we can infer his existence. Just like we may not see the sun in the morning, but when the sunlight enters into the room, then we can understand the presence of the sun, or infer the presence of the sun by the presence of the sunlight. So by using our intelligence, how God is manifesting this material energy, how there is a God manifesting material nature, how we have so many living entities here trying to enjoy, so we can understand that the tendency of the living entities is to try to enjoy love, try to be appreciated, try to enjoy and appreciate others, that tendency, but it's imperfectly fulfilled in the material nature. So since the source of everything is God, then he must also have that tendency to want to enjoy and appreciate. But if he's the Supreme Spirit, not controlled by the material nature, he tried to appreciate and enjoy in a place which is beyond the influence of material energy. So at least that's an idea, and if we work accordingly, then we might realize what that conception is by coming more and more under the spiritual energy, and then we'll understand that conception more and more clearly. And if the process doesn't work, if by practicing devotional service we can't understand the abode, the spiritual abode, we can't understand ourselves as a spiritual soul, we can't understand the existence of the Supreme Person, then there's no loss, because the material world is complete loss anyhow. You can't lose anything. If you have zero, you can't lose anything. Material nature means old age, disease, and death, at least. So therefore, zero is at the end. We actually have zero now, and zero will be at the end. Maybe we think we have something now, but it's assured that there'll be zero at the end, no matter what we do here. Whenever we have to leave this body, the body dies and there's zero left for us. So at least this conception is something positive, something hopeful. And if we work towards it, then we can see whether it's real or not. And if we don't, then we're just going to be left with zero anyhow. Spiritual life may be zero, it may not be true. What Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he may not exist, but maybe all of his products of material nature. So then that's zero. And if we don't accept it, if we don't accept it, then it's zero also. We say, well, it is material energy, then that's zero. Especially at the end. But if we accept there's a Krishna, we're a spiritual soul, there's a spiritual world, we can reach that destination, at least we have something positive to work for, rather than just waiting around until we leave this body or the body dies and we merge into nothingness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes?
In the translation it says that self-realization is only by my mercy. So it's like to get our self-realization, we have to only walk on our mercy path, or are we able to do anything?
Well, Krishna wouldn't explain Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, it was all mercy. He could have just stated that, it's all my mercy. Just accept me in your heart and I'll do everything else. Could have told Arjuna, you don't have to fight in battle, Kurukshetra. Just by my mercy, I'll kill everyone. You can sit here and watch. No, we get his mercy if we do what he tells us to do. Teisham sadatam yukdanam, vajantam prithipurvakam, tadami buddhiyogam tam, yenamam upyantate. To those who are constantly devoted, who worship you with love, then I give them the intelligence by which they can comprehend. So that's how we give His mercy. Out of compassion to them, I dwell in the heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge and darkness born of ignorance. So we have to constantly engage in worshiping Krishna with love, then we'll get His mercy. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Prendra Shmad Bhagavatam Kidai. Shri Prabhupada Kidai. Gaur Pandit.